Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast on Leverage the Chat. I'm Justin Rowland, my co-host Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how are you doing?
Cavs are big stupid losers, but well, I'm good.
You know what? We're recording this after the loss to the Golden State Warriors, which I don't know is too surprising for anybody. I was kind of assuming that this game would
be surprising for Stu Jackson.
Shout out to Stu Jackson, who no longer believes in the Cavs title odds because of tonight. But I thought this game would be rock bottom. Meanwhile, now I'm actually a little bit encouraged, but I'm sure we're going to get into that. But today we do have a special guest, Cavs Twitter legend, LL Cool Dad himself, Jeff Nomina. Jeff, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm ready to throw a moral victory parade here.
It was such a moral victory. I would note that I think this pod is going to be a nightmare for Justin, because I think it's just going to be me and Nam agreeing with each other while Justin is desperately trying to log off or wrap up the pod.
Either that, or we're going to do some deep dive into the bottom five standings and talk about the Nets pick and who Sacramento plays three.
See, I thought we were going to discuss the Cavs Twitter topic of the week, which was cutting Jordan McRae the reason why Kyrie wanted to be traded. I really wanted to deep dive.
Thank God Zavac doesn't listen to podcasts, because I think he would find a way to murder you.
If I had just a little bit more free time, I was going to just Photoshop him in a whole bunch of pictures, like in the parade and holding up the trophy.
How about Jordan McRae liking the tweet that David Zavac?
I was just said about to say
he didn't think he was good. And I was really just sitting there thinking, as we were having that day of discussion, like, I'll bet Jordan McRae searches his own name on Twitter.
I knew for a fact that Jordan McRae searches his own name on Twitter, so I was like kind of treading lightly. I'm like, I'm not going to say anything that's too incriminating. I think he had me blocked before and unblocked me. So
that is weird, because first off, you just don't deserve to ever get unblocked. And second off, like, why were you in his brain enough to think about that? Like I think all three of us have blocked a few strays every now and again, like when it's just like someone who's like being kind of belligerent or just, dumb, or just someone you're not in the mood to hear from. Like, I very rarely think of, like, if it's not someone who I've interacted with a lot, I very rarely think, like, yeah, let me go back. Let's give that rando a second chance. Like, what do you mean to Jordan McRae?
How many people on your blocked or mute list
do you forget
why you blocked or muted them? Like, if I went through my list, I couldn't tell you why I blocked or muted, like, 90% of the people on this list. And they're pretty substantial.
Well, how many people have you blocked?
I haven't blocked a lot. I have a lot of mutes.
Yeah, I got a lot of mutes, too.
I'm really glad that we've gone 3 minutes, 3 minutes into the podcast, so we basically only talked about Jordan McRae and our Twitter blocking habits. So
we're going to get to the game.
That's a great summary of the Cavs Warriors right now.
Can I segue into the game real quick? Because we're talking about being so far into somebody's head ahead on blocking them. How about Kevin Love being so far ahead into Steph Curry's head that he just literally couldn't make a shot on him for like a whole half tonight?
I thought he was going to put a dent in the basketball that one time he got switched on to him. He was so fired up. I've never seen someone dribble that fast and that purposelessly. Like, he had nothing, no plan. He was just like, I gotta get him.
I really wish we had one more regular season game to kind of screw around with, because it'd be really funny to see what would happen if you put Love on Steph for a full game and like on Jordan Bell. Like, Steph is obviously going to cook him, but just to see how mad he would get if you just kept him on him all game. Like, after he hits four shots, he's looking at the bench.
He's still
like,
furious.
Why is he still covering me?
I like
our best chance to beat them might actually just be making them go insane, like just baiting them into insanity rather than
listen. Greg Popovich went extended stretches on purpose of guarding LeBron James with Boris Diaw. There have been crazier things tried.
Was that the finals where they stopped guarding him? Where
they they put Dia on him and had him step like 9 steps back, and then like said, "Well, you can either shoot it or try to get through my fat ass."
The history of finals LeBron stoppers is so weird. It's like Boris Diaw,
JJ Barea,
and Jason Terry.
And meanwhile, there's just this like graveyard of just carcasses that LeBron has just chewed up of amazing perimeter defenders. But you put someone who has no business guarding him, then he can do it.
The finals MVP for like holding him to a 30-point triple double.
Speaking of carcasses, Iggy looked terrible.
Yeah, he looked really bad.
And I know he's going to kill them in the finals, but I've never seen someone get the yips on layups like Iggy. Like, that dude is terrified in transition against the Cavs. Have you noticed that? Even if LeBron's not on the floor, it's like, where is he?
I mean, how hard would that chase down block wreck your life?
Yeah.
I have trouble logging into Twitter because of some of my mentions. I can only imagine how Iggy feels, but there's no way we're buying that he's actually washed, right? Like, he's going to hit like 5 out of 8 threes in the finals like he did last year after looking terrible through the whole playoffs, right?
Yeah, probably. I don't know. He goes through those stretches. I mean,
step up. There'll be some random annoying.
Yeah, it'll be him or like Pat McCaw, who has kind of fallen out of the rotation, which I think is interesting. I thought that guy was pretty good in the finals last year. You know, I think that's kind of the best chance when you're looking at the Warriors. Like, this is kind of the game plan the Cavs would have wanted to have. Like, Durant, Curry, Thompson go off, everyone else dog shit.
Mm-hmm.
Durant, Curry, Thompson went off a little too much and hit 11 threes.
And we couldn't hit anything.
Yeah, and they couldn't hit anything. I mean, it was 7 of 28 from 3. If they hit 3 more threes, which is not outrageous, this game is entirely different. What did you guys think of Isaiah? I know it was a pretty inefficient night. And I do think he still looks rusty, but I'm not like as worried about his ability to get shots off. Justin, I know that was a big concern of yours. What did you see?
I'm encouraged by how Isaiah played. The biggest thing is that he played heavy minutes and still moved around really well on the court. I think that's really encouraging for his rehab process. And as I pointed out on Twitter, this is actually an above average efficiency game for Isaiah. He shot 38%. I think he's only had about one or two games over the last 3-4 years where he shot over 40% against the Warriors, averaging about 35%. Over his last 7 games against them. So considering the rust that he has, I think this is a really encouraging game. One of the best things I saw from Isaiah on the night was the LeBron pick and rolls that they ran with him.
Beautiful.
That led to 3 pretty awesome dunks from LeBron, and it was a little upsetting to see them go away from that in the second half. But that you don't see LeBron really setting screens often, and maybe that's part of why we didn't see it in the second half. As the game got tight and was on the line, LeBron wanted the ball in his hands. But it'd be nice to see as the season progresses if those two can kind of develop that chemistry, because LeBron is just such a devastating player, and his ability to pass out of the pick and roll and to finish through guys, I think would be really, really beneficial and one of the ways that they can use Isaiah well.
Yeah, I think that the Warriors have done a really good job against the Cavs. Go ahead, Jeff.
Oh, I was just going to say, seems like his speed is definitely a weapon. It seems like he's a little passive still, though. Like, I was worried they're going to just treat him like Kyrie and kind of hand him the ball and tell him to go get a shot. But they seem to move him around and get him the ball, you know, while he's moving and coming off screens and stuff. But he seems just a little passive to me. Like, he didn't attack right when he got the ball. He was passing up some shots he kind of assumed he would normally take. So that'll probably change as he gets his legs under.
I think he was a little uncomfortable when they did ask him to do that. You know, I think like when they did ask him, just like, hey, we're going to generate a switch and have Steph guard you. I thought he was a little uncomfortable doing that. Like, I just don't think that's 100% his game. But when do you notice they were doing a decent amount of dribble handoff stuff for him to get him like ahead of steam?
Yeah.
And I thought that worked pretty well. I thought that generated good looks more often than not. And the Cavs aren't a big dribble handoff team. I think they're like lower 30th percentile or something, and like in terms of like how often they do it. But I think Isaiah is a guy who really benefits from that, because he can navigate those really tight spaces and change mm-hmm. directions really well. I did think his playmaking was great. I was glad he only turned the ball over once. I thought he had the ball a lot, and I think turnovers, we've talked about it a lot, are like the biggest things that you can't do against the Warriors, which, by the way, LeBron had 8 turnovers. and like, I do think that's where you die against them, is when, and that's why they do a good job against guys like Harden or Westbrook, where they kind of get a little reckless. So the one turnover was nice. I just think like, yeah, I know we poked fun at the Warriors to start, but like the Cavs, I don't know how you stop Durant in transition, but the free runs got to stop.
Yeah, I mean, we know that KD likes to take the easy path, so you can't give him those open drives down. Shout out to Stu Gotts. I was actually pretty impressed by how Jay Crowder played him on most half-court possessions. Like, I don't know if some of it's fatigue. I think it's worth noting that, like in the first matchup between these teams, this is the third game in 4 nights for the Warriors, and the Cavs were rested. And you're not going to have those situations in a possible finals matchup. But I thought Crowder did a really good job of sticking with him and kind of getting in his airspace. But as he said, it's those buckets in transition, those easy opportunities that this team gives up that just kill the team. Because even in the first half when the Cavs were up big, it was like every possession was just... It took so much effort for the Cavs to go out there and score while the Warriors were just generating these beautiful looks. And as you said, you got to limit the turnovers. You got to limit those easy looks, because they're just too talented. You can't keep up with them if you give that up.
Yeah, Durant had 32, 9 of 16 shooting and 10 of 10 from the line. I mean, he got at least 4 wide open fast break buckets, right? And at least like 6 free throws off of getting fouled and getting wrapped up. Like, that's a lot of free points you're giving up. And I know, and like the Cavs I know that their transition defense is, one, it's an effort problem, and two, it's an age problem. Like, we know that, but also like, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but their floor balance has just been trash. Like, you got guys just recklessly going for offensive rebounds when it's like, dude, you only have 2 guys back, and they have 3 guys at the at the top of the 3-point arc. You can't go for that right now. It's been really.
Yeah, I feel like they almost use the age and laziness thing as an excuse. They're like, no, we're not bad. We're just really lazy. But like, no, they're actually really bad at it too.
Yeah, they're undisciplined. Like, they don't seem to have a strong plan of attack, and like, they got 12 offensive rebounds today, but I don't think a ton of them were on plays like that. I think it was more guys who are already under the hoop, but these lunging dives towards the hoop just aren't doing anyone any good. And I don't know. I mean, Love, I know specifically, was a real culprit tonight for them, where he'd take a 3 and go diving after, like, recklessly after a 3. And it's like, dude, what's your success rate on that? Get back. Like, and, you know, I think people want to say that Crowder needs to be the one to stop the ball, but like, it's really hard to stop Kevin Durant with a full head of steam without any help. Like, it's just not going to work. You have to wall it off for a second, so he has to take it back. I did think, if we're looking for silver linings, the Warriors bench does not look exceptional. Is that fair to say?
Well, they were missing their best small forward in Omri Caspi, right?
Oh yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, it didn't look great.
Didn't they jump out on us in like in the fourth, when they went with KD and Steph both on the bench? Didn't they jump out on us a little bit then? Isn't that when
we all started to fall off? But I think that was a Tyronn Lue lineup problem. That lineup.
Yeah, that was not one of his best moments. That I was going to say, we need to talk about that lineup, because that was just a tire fire.
What were the 5? Do you remember?
Oh yeah. All I know is that Tristan Thompson and Jeff Green did not look good, and I think they went like 1 of 12 or something horrible like that.
That's a pairing I'm okay not having around anymore. I don't think they play well together at all.
Who is that? Sorry, I meant
Green and Thompson. I think that.
Yeah.
I think Thompson eats up a lot of the airspace that made Green successful as a cutter and finisher, and it's turning him into a spot up shooter, which is not something he excels at. And it also forces him to be a bit more of a creator and playmaker, which he's not that good at. And I just think, like, even if it means you got to cut Green's minutes, which is a bummer because he's very much earned minutes this year, I don't think you can play those two together. I think it doesn't work.
Yeah, I agree. There doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason with how those two are used against the Warriors right now. And I think some of that has to do with the lineups that are being used, because I'm still a proponent, at least. I don't think it's super likely that this roster is going to look the same as it does now after the deadline. So talking about the matchup is a little weird, but assuming that this team stays the same, I'm still a proponent of starting Thompson and using Jay Crowder more with that second unit. I think that would help not only Crowder, but Jeff Green and all the other players that play there. But yeah, those two together against the Warriors, because even though the bench isn't as good for the Warriors, they still play defense really damn well. And they were able to lock up basically everything that the Cavs were doing and kind of jump out to a lead that was insurmountable.
Yeah, there was that stretch where any time that you're forcing Jeff Green to kind of create offense, you know, we're sunk. Like, you know that things aren't going well every single time that happens. Because when he looks good is when it's just kind of happening for him. And yeah, as soon as that started happening, you could tell it was going to turn on us.
Does it feel like that Lou has been giving Green a little bit more playmaking responsibility with the second unit to you guys? Because it does to me, and I don't want it to happen anymore.
I don't know if it's that or if it's that the effort and structure has just kind of fallen apart. So Jeff Green's like, I'm going to be a hero here.
I think it's definitely some of that.
It's definitely a combination of the two. I want to interrupt the pod just for a second here, because the Warriors players are complaining because there's no hot water in their showers. Players are coming out shivering.
Yeah. Take that, win, suckers.
Coach would do.
Oh, man, that's good. That's the good stuff. They won the battle, but not the war.
The equipment manager's just sitting there with a shit-eating grin on his face.
Oh, boy. That's just fantastic.
This rivalry being as petty as it is, this is the best. Like, this is the dumbest, most rivalry ever, right?
What's up, Chase Down listeners? Did you know that your chances of winning on draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? That's why Draft is my favorite fantasy site. No more getting crushed by the pros. And it's not just me. More than 1 million people have already downloaded Draft. Play in a real live NBA draft right now and be done in under 5 minutes. It goes really quick. You can customize how many players you're playing against, as well as what the stakes are. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into Real Money Draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use our promo code, THECHASEDOWN. That's right, play in a Real Money Draft for free just by using promo code, THECHASEDOWN. But it gets even better. Draft is so sure you'll love it that they're even giving a money-back guarantee to ChaseDown listeners of up to $100. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come play for free right now with promo code, THECHASEDOWN. Jeff, what's your favorite petty moment from this rivalry?
Oh, man. Who was it that was at Mo Spates tweeting out the baby bottle?
Oh, man.
Oh, forgot. I miss Mo Spates. Like, I miss him, like, being part of this rivalry.
Yeah, like, but think about who it was and what, like, just that's such a ridiculous thing to have happened in a finals game, and it was wonderful. Like, just little stuff like that. I don't know, the drummer, the skeleton drummer with the bass head that said the 3-1 lead thing to it, LeBron's Halloween party. party was pretty great.
The Halloween party will
always cost a couple hundred dollars to have that made.
That's the logistics of the Halloween party will always be my favorite. Like the fact that a caterer was given a work order, the baker had to ice the cookies. Like all of these things had to be asked for and specifically requested. Like, was it like a dead step curry that you had to step over or something like that to get to the party? Like, who, what kind of psycho is asking this of their per? Like, I always said, like, the worst job in the world was LeBron's personal assistant that day. The person who had to do the work for that party.
Man, I feel like that would be like a great Curb episode or something like that. Like, I want to see that put into a TV show.
It was so outrageous, and it was so funny because people were like, "Oh, your team's corny as hell." I'm like, "Yeah," but like, it's so over the top. I don't know.
These teams are so corny; it's ridiculous. The Warriors brought a drone to their backyard barbecue and had balloons that spelled out "super villains."
That was the worst moment in this rivalry, right? Like that. That was. It was funny, but like just so much effort went into that. Like the Halloween party was at least jabbing some. The supervillains thing, like it didn't irk anybody. It wasn't directed, but it was just like them thinking that they were awesome. It was so ridiculous.
It was weird. I don't know.
It's one of the most endearing moments because it's just so weird that it's like these guys just suck and it's awesome.
To get back,
I want to know how many of them were on board and how many of them were pissed.
I think they're all on board. I just think that's how it is.
Like, do you think one of them flew the drone, or was it like Aisha standing off to the side?
I think they had a guy. I think there's always just a guy for people like this. Like, we don't have a guy. Well, maybe you guys do. I don't. But yeah, there's just someone around.
I have at least three drone people on staff. I got that podcast bucks.
That pod money. That you're not sharing with me, apparently, you dick. But I mean, you know, with the Canadian dollar being weak, it's probably, you know, you're like a millionaire over there.
Yeah, exactly. It goes a long way, man.
I have an actual question about basketball for you guys, which I'm sorry to take it to a boring place. But when we've had two games here. Against the Warriors so far, we pretty much know what this team's limitations are. When you're looking specifically at playing the Warriors, does this team need another wing or do they need a big?
Yes.
The answer really might be both. Like, that's what's kind of a bummer is like, I don't sit here and think like the Cavs are playing wings that just have no chance.
Mm-hmm.
But like
But
I don't really feel that way like about the bigs either. It's weird. It's everyone's like 80% of the way there.
Yeah, I think it I really feel
like the
comes
best we've
down.
Ever looked at them was when to Shump or JR played well. Like, I think it's not like we don't need another big guy, like a bigger wing. I think we need somebody who can play on staff or switch onto Clay and handle that. Like, I think Shump in the first finals matchup and JR in the second one, like that was when we had the most success, and neither of those guys is alive anymore. So I think that's something that's kind of missing from this roster, unless Jetty comes in.
So I'm going to take it that you're against the Paul George trade. I'm a little disappointed. You don't want bigger wings. That's fine. I think the Cavs basically just need, I think the Cavs need to add talent wherever they can find it. They need to really just look at what's available. Obviously, you'd like to get a Paul George or a Marcus Gasol, but if you can add some two-way wings, obviously the shooting guard position is something that they should try to address. If not in a major deal, then maybe as a plan B. But yeah, they just need to add talent. Like, it's really that simple, because you're dealing with one of the, if not the best, one of the best rosters ever put together. And it's a really tall order. So you got to do everything possible to give yourself an opportunity to pull off an upset.
I was so...
It would be so fun to see Paul George on this
roster. God, it would be amazing. I was sooning so hard when the Kings were up 10 after one quarter against the Thunder. I was like, oh, come on, guys.
Man,
I had dread.
Hang on.
I got to come up with a good soon joke if I'm going on the podcast.
Yeah. I'm sure you'll come up with one soon. I want to interrupt the podcast again to read Twitter, because that's what I'm doing now these days. You know it's a bad Cavs loss when Chops is tweeting out 8-player trades between three teams. We've got to deal with the Cavs getting DeAndre Jordan, Kent Bazemore, Lou Williams, and Montrezl Harrell. I went Snoop Dogg.
Izzle.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah, so as I said, the Cavs need guys, and Chops has found a way. Shout out to Chops.
Chops finds a way. That's kind of beautiful in a lot of ways.
It really is.
It's like love finds a way.
How much time have
worse.
You guys spent with the time machine? The time machine with the trade machine?
Not much, actually, because I'm like so single-minded. I'm just not interested in anyone except Paul George. I don't know, man. Like, I just keep thinking, like, the difference between the Cavs competing against the Warriors and not competing against the Warriors is not adding another guy who's pretty solid. Like, I just don't see like that. Like, I guess if JR is going to be this toxic all season, I thought he was fine against the Warriors. I thought he should have pulled more from three, as I always do. But
yeah,
like, I thought he was fine. He attacked Steph pretty well. But, like, you know, I just don't – I like, Kent Bazemore, sure. He's a very nice defender. Three-pointer seems like it's pretty solid. But, like, how does that look when it's, like, completely put up to the highest scrutiny? Like
– yeah.
Like, I always think about that. Like, I was just talking with Mort on GChat the other day. And we're talking about Jay Crowder. And he was kind of, like, making the point, like, listen, like, guys like – he's a Crowder cynic, unfortunately. And he's like, guys like Crowder, like, look good when they're on teams that are not as good, that don't have as high of pressure, that look to generate them good shots where they're comfortable all the time. And, like, you don't have that luxury on great teams. Like, who's to say Bazemore doesn't fall apart or take even, like, if he's 15% worse, which is not a ton, then what did you trade a first-round pick for?
Mm-hmm.
Jeff, I just thought that was an interesting perspective.
Do you have someone else's opinions that you can share with us?
Okay.
Like Carter did.
Jeez. Dick.
I just think it's like a weird year where there's just nobody on the market that's all that exciting. Like there isn't a name that, like you said, that changes the math.
It's just a weird trade market whatsoever.
Like, that's not Paul George. You're not beating the Warriors, right?
I mean, it would give you a realistic chance, I think.
He's saying without.
Yeah, Paul George.
Yeah, but he's saying
a
non-Paul George trade will not push them over the top.
I think Marc Gasol gives him a chance. Don't at me.
It's just so weird. Like, what are you going to do with that? Like, I don't. Are you going to trade your own pick?
We'll play him at center.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm a smart ass tonight.
You are, man. You're really coming at me. I don't know. It's just I'm worried about Gasol, like. A lot of smart people are correctly noting that all his defensive metrics have fallen off, and not just this year when he's playing with no energy or soul. Like even last year, it was starting to fall off a bit. So like maybe they just cook him until he can't play anymore, or like maybe the fact that he's had like three games shooting over 50% from the field doesn't get better. Like I don't know. I think you're probably right, but. I think if you're the Cavs, you have to keep your powder dry until the very last second for Paul George. Have a contingency deal worked out, sure. Like, get ready to go chase Bazemore if the price is right. But, like, I'm not trading shit until I know for damn sure the Thunder aren't giving me Paul George.
Yeah, it's difficult because I feel like players like Paul George or Marc Gasol aren't available often or for long, I should say. Like it's like 10-15 minutes where all of a sudden that window opens up where they're like, okay, we're actually trading them in, and the team has kind of committed itself. So I think you're right that you have to have those contingency plans in place, but it'll be interesting to see whether or not either of those guys actually become available and what they are available for. But before this podcast just becomes us talking about players that aren't on the team, I think it is encouraging. We should talk a little bit about players that are on the team. Kevin Love being one that now has had two very solid games against the Warriors. Some of that can be attributed to Jordan Bell covering him rather than Draymond Green.
And Jordan Bell is not up for the task, man.
No, he's not. But I think it's encouraging to see him play well. He didn't really get exposed a whole lot in the pick and roll. The Warriors are kind of targeting other things. And when you're looking ahead to June, it's nice to see that Love has something to kind of build off of and a solid foundation rather than other years. And he's kind of continued some of those better games that we saw from him in the finals last year.
Yeah, I think he's been really solid. I think that he really didn't force too much tonight, like another just quiet, like 17 points on 9 shot attempts. You know, maybe you need him to shoot more if he's going to be out there defensively, but I thought he was fine. I do think he's, at this point, playing him at center is the best way to play him against the Warriors. I don't know. He was fine. I wasn't, like, blown away, were you?
I wasn't blown away. I mean, there was one point in the third quarter where it's like, Isaiah Thomas has taken as many shots as Love and LeBron combined, and that wasn't ideal. I would have liked to see them keep going to him, especially early in the game. You saw them kind of throw those passes to him in the post, and he was really taking advantage. I'd like to see him be a little bit more assertive, but this is still better than him forcing the issue and either getting stripped or missing shots that turn into transition buckets. Like, I would prefer this, but at the same time, I'd like to see them keep him involved just a little bit more, because he's been so good this year. I don't want him turning into a decoy option like he was through a lot of the Kyrie era.
Yeah, the thing that scares me about Love is that with him and Crowder, like, I don't think Love was bad on the boards or anything, but I'm not sure we got a rebound tonight and the last time we played them, and our rebounding hasn't been great. And it's like, we're not winning the rebounding matchups. We have Isaiah Thomas and Kevin Love out there. Your defense just has a pretty low ceiling that it can reach. And so it's not so much a problem with Love as much as it is if you're trying to go all wings next to him. The Love Crowder thing just scares me a little bit. There's no rim protection. We're not getting a ton of rebounds. I mean, you're spacing the floor, which is great on offense, but I just don't know how much you're giving back on the other end.
Yeah,
that starting lineup hasn't been as good as people think.
No, like, I think it's been really bad. Really, I think that is the correct way to frame it.
Do you guys think that they should look for a change now or continue to kind of ride this out while Isaiah Thomas gets his footing?
Can I give you a stat real quick before we answer that question?
Yeah, for sure.
Last year, Jay Crowder had the best defensive rebound rate of his career at 17.3%. This season, he's rebounding 10.4%. His career worst by 2%. So that sucks.
And I got stats too. Let's just read stats for the rest of the podcast. The four man lineup of Crowder, LeBron, Love, and Smith have played over 700 minutes this year, and they have a offensive rating of 110, defensive rating of 113, so net rating of minus 3.2. I was rounding a little bit, but yeah, it hasn't been a positive lineup, and I don't think it's fair to say that was just the 6 games of playing with Derrick Rose. Like, that no, lineup
that,
just
that,
hasn't
that
been
stuff
effective.
Is done. We're done. That stops being an excuse. We're too far into the season.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you do? I mean, I understand wanting to start Tristan Thompson. I actually kind of think that maybe they should, but, like, I think we all agree that Love at the 5 makes more sense. If you put him back at the 4, it creates other problems. So I don't know what the right answer is. Like, I don't know who. I mean, obviously a trade for finding somebody who could play next to him would be nice, but I don't know what with this roster the answer is there.
Jay Crowder has to be not a bad player.
Am I crazy?
Yeah, like Crowder needs to play better offensively. That would help out a lot. But I mean, it's not like Kevin Love has been exposing centers all year. Like, teams have been hiding their center on Jay Crowder for most of the season. Sure, there's going to be some spacing issues, but teams really aren't respecting Crowder from three. Like, they're counting on being able to close out late to him, and they're packing the paint because it's not like he's someone that's really going to take it to the rim either. So I don't know how much it would change. I think Tristan and Isaiah have looked good together from what I've seen, and I think some of that could continue with the starting lineup. And you need to find out what you have in Thompson. Like, I thought he was a little unfocused even tonight, mishandling the ball and just really not playing well. He rebounded well, but outside of that, it wasn't a great game from him at all. You have to find out what you have in him, especially as the deadline approaches. And I think the best way to do that is putting him in a situation where he's had success in the past with those starters. Because if he can't replicate that, you need to start looking at contingency plans there.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't see how Crowder becoming what he's supposed to be fixes everything. And it's not, and if you want to just blame JR for being bad, I understand why you would want that. But with Crowder sharing the court with JR, the Cavs are being outscored by 1.8 points per 100 possessions. Not great. Not, you know, like it's not good with when it's just Crowder without JR. So no, you know, like, oh, well, JR should drag him down. Outscored by 4.1 points per 100 possessions.
Like, that doesn't seem great.
It's just not good, man. And like, I don't know. He has to be better. He's too important to the team.
I like how our analysis is basically, yeah, that doesn't seem great.
It's not good. And like, that's if you want to be on team wing, like if you're on team hashtag soon, that's the reason you're on it, because you're like, man, maybe they won't have to depend on Crowder so much. Or depend on Smith. Like, that's the nice thing about going to get a wing, getting either a center or a shooting guard solves the problem in the sense that either move forces Crowder or Smith to the bench, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like, getting at least one of the problems out of the most important lineup the Cavs have, the one they start the game with, would help.
Here, I'm going to speak. Go ahead, Jeff.
I was just going to say, do you think if you put Crowder with the second unit, it solves some of that? I mean, do you think it's just an issue with the starters? And if he was in a different role, maybe a more defined role, he'd be fine? I mean, it's just odd that he turned into a pumpkin overnight like this.
I think there's a chance, I think, just because the bench, at least historically, has moved the ball a little better.
Yep. And they play with more pace. Like, I think he can do a lot of what Jeff Green does, which is finish cuts, catching it like 7 feet from the basket. I don't know if it's necessarily going to help his 3-point shooting, but it'd be interesting to see him play with the bench, especially because Tyronn Lue seems opposed to playing Crowder in the fourth quarter for whatever reason. And I think he should be part of that closing unit with the Cavs. So if not starting him means that he's playing with a bench unit that plays more up tempo, that can get him easy cuts, and he can now close the games and still keep his minutes around the same, I'm all for it. What I was going to say before is we've tried to speak the Paul George trade into existence. We tried to speak Marc Gasol into existence. Let's come up with a shooting guard theory. I'm going to trade the Brooklyn pick with J.R. Tristan for C.J. McCollum and Aminu. It's happening.
I don't think that's happening. Though the Blazers do kind of suck.
Let's give them a lot of salary in the Brooklyn there. Pick.
I think you could interest them in Kevin Love. I don't think you could interest them in rebuilding and trading off somebody for a future asset, but I think Kevin Love might be interesting there.
You don't think Snickle Fritz and the Brooklyn pick is enough?
Do you think Middleton's still available? Chops' favorite player? Do you think Chris Middleton is available? He's, you know,
I'm not here for Chris Middleton slander. He is fantastic, and I think he's up over 20 points per game this year.
Oh, I love him. He passes well. He generates turnovers. I love him.
Yeah, I don't know.
I wonder. I mean, they're like 500.
Yeah,
man. I wanted to look up the Chris Middleton stats really quickly, so I just typed in Middleton on Google. Man, fuck the royal family. I can't sit through all this shit.
Justin's going through some like post-colonial angst right now. Like we moved on a long time ago, but Canada's still pretty new at this, so listeners are just gonna have to deal with.
That still on my money. That old hag is still on my money. I want that. I want it gone. I'm gonna start a revolution. Yeah, Chris Middleton, 19.9 points per game. Man, he's awesome. Yeah, I don't think the Bucks would have any interest in moving him, but yeah, that would be the type of player that you'd want.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that Bays seems doable, and I think I've made the point that if the Cavs are at the deadline and Sam Presti's like, sorry, man, we're not trading Paul George, I do think they absolutely need to do a deal with their own pick. If that's the case, if they are truly holding on to the Brooklyn pick, you at least burn through that asset, because whether LeBron stays or goes, I don't think this team's adding two rookies next season. And you really don't want to you just don't want to keep that in your back pocket through free agency. Like, I don't know. I think you got to burn that asset. And I think Bays seems like a pretty good target there. And he at least gives you a different look, right?
Wasn't there some big article about Bazemore and LeBron and Under Armour versus Nike?
Yeah. Bazemore was like a big part of recruiting Steph, I think.
And that shows you everything you need to know about Under Armour.
Like underlying rivalry between those two and stuff. Like that'd be a pretty fun storyline to bring back up. I forget who wrote.
Yeah,
that.
I don't think LeBron has an issue with playing with guys that he doesn't like on a basketball court. Because I mean, they went pretty heavily after Lance Stevenson last season, and I think he's all for anyone that helps them win.
LeBron's like Don Draper in that one episode of Mad Men where the guy's like, I pity you, man. And Don just turns around and is like, I don't think about you at all. And then walks off the elevator. Like, I think that's LeBron with Kent Bazemore. Like, Kent Bazemore might be quietly raging against the machine about LeBron. I don't think it's reciprocal.
LeBron has the weirdest rivalries with players. Like, my favorite is still Tobias Harris.
He was in chill mode. And then he wasn't against the Orlando Magic. And the poor Orlando Magic, who traded Tobias Harris like 9 years ago, are still like bearing the brunt for some reason.
Oh, hang on. Can we talk about, I don't know how Cavs Twitter let this slip. I haven't been on a ton this past week, so maybe I just missed it. But
cool, I have a life brag.
Yeah, we didn't make a big enough deal about Klay Thompson complaining that he was called a bitch on a basketball court.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I just completely overmodulated my mic. But yeah, that's crazy.
I guess he just got his feelings hurt, man.
The hypocrisy is alarming.
That was the weirdest thing ever.
You're right. It's so Warriors.
They pull that stuff all the time.
That is.
I mean, remember when they got mad? Remember when they got mad at Milwaukee when they busted up the streak when Golden State was going for, I don't know,
like 26 to start the season or whatever it was.
Yeah, and they thought the Bucks celebrated too much. Those dudes celebrate everything.
And the Bucks sucked that year, so that was actually impressive. They were allowed to be proud for a day.
They probably made their year.
Dude, I went to a game. In Milwaukee later that year, and I swear to God, people were wearing shirts. Like, fans were wearing shirts celebrating breaking up that Warriors streak.
My God.
It was like the most, like, new money.
I still remember that Clippers game that broke our losing streak.
What a big game that was. I was dating this girl at the time when that game was going on, and she didn't have a TV in her dorm room. And I literally just knocked on her next door neighbor, who I'd met like twice, was like, I need your TV. It was not okay.
I was at that game.
Oh, really? You were at that game?
Oh, man.
I swear to God, that was the loudest. It's the loudest I've ever heard the cue. And I like, humble brag mode, I've been to like a lot of playoff games, Eastern Conference, like fairly big. I haven't been to a finals game, but like that was the loudest I've ever heard the cue ever, by far.
I'd rather. that's right up there with the game where Baron Davis beat the Miami Heat.
Oh, the lob to Alonzo G.
Oh, man.
The lob to Alonzo G, the defining moment of Baron Davis's career. I think I'd rather be there than any of the 2016 finals games.
I wish Jacob Greenberg listened to our podcast because he hates that we love Baron Davis, that we claim him.
Cavaliers legend, man.
Cavaliers legend
Do you think they're going to retire Baron Davis's number the same year they retire Dwayne Wade's? Or
I don't think anyone else is clamoring for 85, so I think they could probably get away with it.
They should do it just because of that. Just because it's such a ridiculous number, they should retire it just for the fun of it.
More impactful Baron Davis or Nate Thurmond.
Man, they got some really bad jerseys retired.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, it's going to make.
I'm fine with the Dante Jones statue outside the arena.
I think it should be more like a Dante Jones thing right outside the visitors' locker room that just kicks you in the nuts right when you open the door.
There's a Dante Jones.
Start every game with one technical as memorial.
Yeah. There's a Dante Jones statue that when you walk by it, you get fined.
And LeBron, but LeBron pays for it. It's actually just an elaborate money laundering scheme.
Isn't that what sports are?
In a lot of ways, yes. I don't think I've ever watched a player so yoked as Dante Jones was. That dude was just he looked like a linebacker. And not in a way that I thought would make him an effective basketball player.
He looked like he spent the entire time off bench pressing Kendrick Perkins.
Well, Kendrick Perkins is just like eating some Cheetos.
I still have a feeling that Perk is going to end up on this team by playoffs.
I'll be sick. He's in the G League still, right?
How funny
would it
be if we signed Jordan McRae now?
Oh, my God. That would be hilarious. Well, I'll note that after doing a little research, I learned that Jordan McRae was just cut by Baskonia. So he's available, folks.
Was he cut?
I think he got hurt, though. So I think that's why they let him out. I think he was like a one-year deal. Point is, free agent.
So what you're telling me is that Jordan McRae got hurt, cut by a EuroLeague team, then logged on to Twitter to search his name.
Oh, no.
Only to find people are talking mad shit about him.
Only to find the guy staunchly defending his removal from the league. Like, it's not just that we were shitting on him. It's that the guy who was staunchly saying that he shouldn't have been cut was shitting on him.
Yeah. An argument about whether or not Cunning McRae let Kyrie ask for a trade request resulted in the person defending him saying that Jordan McRae sucked. That's a rough day, man.
That's tough.
Poor Jordan McRae.
And the best is that he like petty liked it. Like he didn't respond and defend himself. It was like a passive aggressive, like just liking the tweet.
Which, I mean, he is Kyrie's good friend, so.
If he played defense that well, he'd still be on the Cavs. Well, I think this has gone full circle. The late night podcasting is it's an interesting experience. So we started with Jordan McRae. We ended with Jordan McRae. So, Jeff, thank you very much for coming on. We appreciate it. To all our listeners, we appreciate you guys as well. Remember to support our sponsor and draft. You can get a free game for to win cold hard cash when you use promo code THECHASEDOWN. Also, remember to rate, review, subscribe. It's the best way to support the show. So thank you guys, and as always, go Cavs. We'll be right back.